each one of the appeals.
Well, everything so highlighted.
I got things
in 15 minutes.
You're going to be late.
We got an auctioneer amongst us. He's a fast talker.
Started. I got to go.
Done.
Yeah. Okay, how shall we proceed with this? Just,
Well, let me first of all just make a few statements for the record. Recall that when we met last time, I addressed the committee and I advised you that the Supreme Court of the state of Delaware has reviewed these procedures and has really laid down an established law as to how these are to proceed. Probably the most significant case, or one of the most significant cases on point, is the case of Seaford Associates v. Board of Assessment Review of Sussex County, which is a 1988 case, which was authored by Justice Walsh on behalf of the court. And let me just read to you from that case very briefly what Justice Walsh had to say about the burden and the process in determining whether the taxpayer had overcome its burden. Here's Justice Walsh speaking. He says, "A property owner seeking a reduction in assessment is faced with a substantial evidential burden at both the administrative and appellate levels. Before the Board of Assessment, here, it confronts the presumption of accuracy in favor of the existing assessment, a presumption which is rebutted only through evidence of substantial overvaluation. On appeal to the Superior Court and further on appeal to the Supreme Court, the Board of Assessment's decision is deemed prima facie correct and will be disturbed only if the applicant appellant can show that the Board acted contrary to law, fraudulently, arbitrarily, or capriciously." What this case says and repeats from prior law is that you have to review the evidence that was presented to you on the 3rd of April. If you deem that evidence that was presented is competent evidence and shows substantial overvaluation, then you have to determine whether the presumption has been rebutted. If it has been rebutted, then it's up to the Board of Assessment and its designee to come forward through additional competent expert testimony and testify as to how the appraisal was done, the method that was utilized, and the result that was reached, and his or her professional opinions as an expert assessor that what the fair market value is. Right. You then have to weigh all of the evidence. That is to say, the evidence that the taxpayer presented that was sufficient to overcome the presumption and the evidence that is given to you by the assessor, and come up with a determination as to whether or not the assessment as established by the assessor should stand or be modified, and then that would be your recommendation to council on the 17th. So having said all that, I would like to compliment staff on the great job they did in putting together a history of what occurred here on the 3rd. I think we can utilize those documents and go through each, and one by one, first of all, determine from the evidence that you heard the other night, as is memorialized in the document that Valerie prepared and that Gary prepared, and I see now that Diego has prepared, whether or not the presumption of correctness has been overcome. If it has not, then you must so state on the record. And if you do so state on the record, then the assessment stands. And I think the way to do this, work through this, is to, first of all, take a moment on each one of them and look at what the taxpayer had to say. And then allow Diego to respond with regard to each, and then you make your determination as to the presumption. If you find the presumption has been overcome, we will swear Diego. We will qualify him, and he will give his testimony. So if that suits you, I think that's what we need to do. If you have any questions?
Hey, I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
I assume that you went over the town charter very well.
I went over it pretty well, yeah.
Okay, well, one thing that I think it says, this is just one of many that I'd like to talk about. Three council people, or now we have four, but three of them have to without me, really, without anybody from the Board of Assessment. I listen, and they decide, and then they in turn decide whether they want to present it to the entire council at a later date with all seven members, and all seven members decide at that time what's a go and what's not a go.
That's my reading as well.
Okay, that's part of it.
And you, by the way, your role here, as I see it, is that of an advocate on behalf of the Board of Assessment to support, and as you did the other night, give comment on how certain assessments were made and your opinions on whether or not the taxpayers, to react to the taxpayers' testimony, as you did the other night.
Okay. Now my second thing is, if the town charter specifically says that the committee of council members shall sit at the stated place and time to hear the appeals of all taxpayers, and they shall collect such information. Well, why didn't anyone introduce this package of letters the other day at the time and place where we sat to hear? Why wasn't all these appeals in writing? And first of all, why were they accepted? Because it wasn't a published policy of accepting all these.
Right, that question came up, and
yes,
my partner Terry J. Work and I discussed it, and we reviewed the charter provisions, and we were unable to find a provision that says, in order to present an appeal, the applicant must be present at the hearing.
It doesn't say that.
It doesn't say that.
But it says, I shall hear.
And therefore, it was our interpretation then that since it was not expressly prohibited, that is to say, if you don't come, you're out of there, that the committee could accept those if it so chooses and could afford such weight as it deems proper or deems that it's entitled to, and then move on from there, keeping in mind that those are not sworn, and keeping in mind that the other night the people who stood before you,
right,
each one of them was sworn,
right,
but that's still, because there's no prohibition, says if you don't come, you don't get a shot. That's still, it's up to the discretion, in my opinion, and the opinion of my partner, that the committee has to make a determination. Are we going to consider it? And number two, how much weight are we going to give it? And I almost think that fairness begs it, because there are a couple of people there who could not be here. It's not that they chose not to be here, but they could not be here, and they wanted to have their concerns heard. And
but here's what I say. No one introduced it during the hours of 4 and 7. No one. No one from the council. A pack of papers was thrown on the desk. Someone should have introduced. We have this stack of letters for you to reconsider at a later time, but we don't want to go over them right now. They were not introduced. I don't have any idea when we got these.
Okay. I don't think that there's any procedural flaw with having them not identified and introduced at that meeting, and the hours of 4 to 7 are really not controlling, because there was evidence taken after 7 o'clock. I think this, they come in, they're to be considered by the committee if they choose to give it such weight as they choose to, and you know, are they prejudiced by not having come? I mean, some of those made a conscious decision to say, I could go to that meeting, but you know what? I don't want to. I'm just going to send in a letter.
Right.
But others of those were away,
right,
and could not be here, and don't you think they deserve to have their voices heard? And then it's up to the committee to take such action as it deems proper.
Well, I think then that the charter should be revised, stating that if you don't want to show up, you can send a letter in, and it has to be received by so-and-so date, and it will be taken into consideration.
Fortunately for me, that's not a legal question. That's a political decision.
Well, it should be in there. I can't honestly defend the fact that, well, you can just stay at home and send all your letters and you want all year long, any day that you want, and send it in to us, and we're going to have to look at it. Because
that would be another matter for debate, but you certainly could make the case for the elderly lady who was homebound and couldn't get out and couldn't be here. You know, and there was one who appeared through her daughter, and clearly the landowner wasn't here. But,
right, but it's okay. Evidence was given and evidence was heard.
Now, in this case, if it were a problem, you know, if we had a deluge of letters coming in and we're a problem, yeah, then this charter would have to be changed, or
yeah,
should be.
Right.
But another thing, I think if the council has consistently done that, which it has,
that's
it's
fine.
Not doing something new this year that it hasn't done in the past.
But you swear everybody in this year, which...
Right,
do away
before.
With the swearing mm-hmm. in for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. But you can say, you can have people sitting outside their line sending all kind of letters in, mm-hmm. then people to come in here to spend the
time. And then in that case, it's up to us whether...
actually the swearing in was for the benefit of the landowner because, you know, in the case that I just told you about, what happened there is there was a shopping center down in Laurel, Delaware, and it was an older shopping center, and it was assessed using a particular method of assessment, and they hired, the shopping center hired an expert appraiser from Wilmington who had been doing this type of thing all over the state to come down and assess his property. He came to the hearing and gave sworn expert testimony. That means that he came, he gave testimony under oath, he was qualified as an expert witness, and he testified before the Board of Assessment. One of the reasons that the Board of Assessment lost that case is that their own assessor, number one, was not sworn and was not qualified as an expert witness, and the Supreme Court held the only evidence before the court was the sworn testimony of the landowner's expert. So when we talk about, so first of all, the swearing, you know, if these good people come in here and just stand up and start talking, and later there is needs to be a legal determination, well, that really wasn't testimony if it wasn't sworn. So, you know, it's just a matter of fairness to everybody, but we have to adhere by the laws as it currently stands. So.
Well, I do think the charter should be changed to say that you can do this, so no one has to actually come and appear. They can just sit at home, sign the letter, and then not swear to anything.
Oh, and the burden is on them. You have to understand, the burden is on them to come forward and give substantial evidence of substantial overvaluation. If they don't do that, then they lose. Did any of them do that on Monday night? That's what these gentlemen need to determine tonight. Was there substantial evidence of overvaluation? None of them had an expert witness, but every one of them was under oath, and some of them did have appraisals and things such as that.
And all these are not under oath. And if we consider one, we got to consider all of them. We can't single out one and say, well, we're not going to honor this one because...
I would not disagree with that.
Right.
I think if the board chooses to consider them, then they consider all of them.
All of them. You can't just say one. Every single one of them. Now, I appreciate the fact that Ramuna didn't come in here with all his properties and tie up the whole meeting. I think we should publish it next year, even in a letter form when you send out the taxes, to say you can send in a letter rather than appear. And I think it'd be more fair that way.
And I will say this, too. I think with regard to
those folks
who sent in their letters, you know, any of them who are dissatisfied with the result that they get, I think would be less likely to challenge that if they knew that their submittal was actually considered as opposed to simply rejected because they chose not to come to the meeting.
Okay. Well, I took up enough everybody's time.
I do have there are a couple people that came in today that didn't appear on the 3rd, and they were sitting outside.
Now, what are we? This isn't a public hearing, are we?
It's a public hearing.
Okay, they're allowed to speak here as a continuation of the appeals process.
I think they're allowed to. They're certainly allowed to come in.
Oh, I know they can come in.
They're certainly. I think. Well, you know, if you're going to consider those written submittals, you probably need to hear from them.
Well, let me ask you this: just when is this appeals hearing over?
Thank you. Yeah, that's when I was going to say.
It is over.
That date was the 3rd, and that's it.
That's why I said we don't have to go over these, and we don't have to hear anybody else.
That really is not my decision. That is the
excuse me. On that part, you know, you say you don't want to go over them. They were led to believe that by submitting this letter, they were taken care of. Even though they were in Florida, or whatever, they emailed me. We talked to Dave, and Dave was accepting them. I just want to make sure you guys know that.
Where's Dave at today?
I don't know how to explain that. I just wanted to let you know that I personally told them that it might not count, but please email me. I will forward it to the Board of Assessment. I'm not sure if they're going to take it or not.
When does this get over? It has to be over by the 17th because that's when you report are required to report back.
But the appeal day was the 3rd. That was it. But that, no 4th, the 3rd.
Well, we didn't finish our job on the 3rd.
So if we choose to hear those people out there today,
we're going
to
listen. But then
after today,
this is them too.
We're not allowed to hear anyone else, right?
I think what you're allowed to, you gentlemen make the rules.
We're allowed to do what
you
we want.
You can do what you want. But,
I mean, but if we're going to vote on it on Monday night.
Actually,
right.
you need to have, when we leave here today, a list of recommendations for the full council for Monday night. And what your recommendations are not the done deal. Your recommendations are your recommendations until the full council votes on it on Monday night. But it's got to be Monday night.
So what you're telling us now is if we listen to these people, we're leaving, well, the town council is leaving themselves open to, well, you're,
until
the
17th.
Start on
until
the 3rd Monday. And they end on the 17th.
I think
if somebody comes in the morning and says, I want to be heard, well, we got to hear. They got to hear.
All these letters had been gone over, correct?
Yes.
By staff. Okay, I think in the interest of organization and timeliness, we need to set a cutoff date for the appeals process, and that's April 3rd.
Right.
And for the follow-up is going to be today, April 13th. And when we cut off today, it's the end of the process.
I agree. Yep.
I think you need to have your list of recommendations at the conclusion of this meeting.
Yeah. I agree.
But yeah, we're in violation of not publishing the fact that we're having a Board of Assessment meeting today. Because it says right in the town charter has to be published.
No, it's not a Board of Assessment meeting. It's a continuation of the appeals day.
But
it is a public meeting, so right. those folks certainly would be entitled to come in here.
And it should have been published.
I don't know that it wasn't.
It was
published. It says posted.
I'm sure it was
posted.
On
the resumption of appeals day here.
I'm just telling you.
It's right here.
It's so messed up, it's pathetic. So... whatever you want to do. I don't think Diego, Mr. Diego, you didn't go over these appeals letters, did you?
Yes, I did.
You did? Oh, okay, fine. Okay.
Do you want to let those folks?
My feelings is that we ought to go over the letters that he's already, and the people outside. That.
Well, the notice says this is a public meeting, and it is.
Well, they can come in,
sure.
Thank you. But I mean, if we listen to theirs, then we've got to come back because Diego and the town's got to go through their problem.
Well,
again, so we got to have another meeting to take care of them.
Not if it's something that they can go, you're right, I'll fix it now. Otherwise, if Diego says, no, I have to look into it, then skip it. Say, sorry, leave it.
Well, I tell you one further than that. If you choose to hear from them, you have to make that determination. Did they give you sufficient evidence to overcome the presumption of correctness? And they have to give you sufficient evidence of substantial. That's more than de minimis.
You
want
evaluation. You only got one or two.
We only got a couple.
If you want to save time,
bring them in.
I can tell you I review every single one.
We're wasting time now. Let's bring them in.
If it's only two, that's fine. If somebody comes in there later, we got.
Bring you good to that main door.
Lock.
All right. So what I suggest that you do is start with the list and go through them one by one.
Now, do we want to listen to these people first?
Well, I guess you could.
Oh, Mr. Two
just
one.
Sorry.
Okay.
Right, yeah. Oh, I had told her to talk to Diego this morning anyway, at like 9 o'clock.
Is that Mrs. Lamb?
No, this is Mrs. Deacon. Dr. Deacon.
Which one is this?
I think she has several problems.
Mr. Deacon, we need to swear you in. Everybody who's testified has been sworn in, so he comes to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God. Okay.
And pretty much talk in that direction with Mr. Diego down there.
Into the microphone, though, please.
I came about our assessment for my husband and I put in the Carter Road Professional Park over on Carter Road, and the assessment for the water retention pond came in, and it's at $73,300. We can't build on it. We can't sell it. I mean, we just have to. It's there for the water to run off, and we didn't feel that we really should have to be assessed at $73,300 for a water retention pond.
Was that assessed separately? That's a separate piece of property? Or?
Yes, and we have a parcel number assigned to that piece
yes.
of property. But what we have done with parcels like the one that Mrs. Deacon is
Deacon.
Mm-hmm. Is we adjust the land value to a very lower figure than the $73,000 that we have on it. Most likely what we are representing on that parcel as it is valued now is as a buildable site. Being that it's just a retention pond, most likely we would end up with about probably $10,000 or $15,000 on it.
Okay.
Fran, have you looked at it?
Not the retention pond, no, but I think several of the numbers, those are identified numbers are wrong, so I don't know which one is which, really.
We have, I brought the two other assessments, which we have sold the lots anyway, so we won't, James took care of that. But this was the one, and he said that this number, and...
If I could get the parcel number, I can get to it and make
Can you read it to him? I don't have my glasses on.
I just happened to run into her husband last night, and then he said, I want to come to the assessment. I said, it's already over. You know?
Parcel number DC 17-018-0001-0108-000.
That's all I say. I won't take any more of your time. Thank you.
Let him review it and change it.
Did you say you could do it?
Yes, I can review it.
And then, he said what, between $10,000 and $15,000?
Most likely.
Somewhere in that neighborhood? I think you can open a swimming pool.
There you go. That's a good idea.
Public pool.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry about that, Mrs. Kane.
Now, she forgot about the other items that she was going to talk about, so goodbye. Right? Okay.
Which one? Is that same part? No, the same area?
Over on at her house, you know, they have two lots.
Yeah, and they're building on one, yeah.
Yeah, they have an assessment for like $120,000 for the one lot with nothing on it. And so now that the house is on both of them, I said just get it combined through the town and get reassessed.
Actually, they just did do a resubdivision and combined the lots, yes.
So would that change their tax basis this year, by any chance?
Once the assessors go through it again, yes.
So it'll
it'll adjust to whatever.
When it's finished.
When it's finished, is that when it's going to be? Okay. Right. Maybe that's why she didn't introduce it then.
Okay. Should we start at the top of the list and just go through each one?
Yes.
Do you gentlemen have the...
comments, yes.
The notes?
The notes, okay. I mean.
Great. First one is Regina Brown. She did submit an exhibit, which is marked as Exhibit 1, which Gary has.
You have all the exhibits?
Yes, I have the exhibits.
Yeah, she, you want our comments or reasoning now, right?
Well, I think that you need to deliberate amongst yourselves and determine, has the presumption become overcome, and if so, then we move on to phase two.
I believe that she offered ample proof that that particular piece of property was overassessed.
What is that piece? Let me see that piece.
It's the one that's unbuildable next to Brown's house.
The one right next to their house.
This thin strip.
Did you want to see this?
No, I know where she's talking, where he's talking about.
And I agree with that.
That's cool. I agree with it.
Right. Well, Diego, do you have a comment?
Yes. As you can read from the notes that I have hand-delivered to you, I identify the parcel number, which is ID DC17010130255010000. And I did agree with the fact that, due to the fact that it's too small to build on it, that we need to make an adjustment for shape and size and adjust the value to $9,100.
If you were sworn to give testimony, would you suggest to the board that they adjust it to that amount?
Yes. That would be my recommendation.
Let me do this real quick. I'm building a record here, folks, and I need to do this. Would you please swear... expert placer.
That's what I was thinking also.
Would you please state your name for the record, sir?
Diego Salmon is.
Spell your last name.
S-A-M-A-N-E-Z.
By whom are you employed?
Tyler Technologies.
And in what capacity?
As the project supervisor of the Smyrna revaluation project.
All right. And you are, what would you, how would you classify your professional title?
I'm a real estate appraiser for Tyler Technologies.
Okay. Are you licensed in any state to do that?
In this, yes, sir.
What states, please, sir?
Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and the New England states.
All right, sir. And did that licensing require some formal schooling?
Yes, it does.
And where did you take that?
I attended it, first of all, for appraisal purposes, I did attend classes with the IAAO, which is the International Assessors Association Organization. I also attended real estate appraisal classes with the IAAO, and I acquired my license back in 1987.
Have you ever testified before in assessment hearings?
Yes, I have.
On approximately how many occasions?
I would say more than 100 times.
All right, sir. And were you primarily responsible for the reevaluation assessment in Smyrna?
I'm responsible for all the values in the town of Smyrna.
All right, sir. And to the extent that you're called upon to give opinions with regard to these matters, are those opinions expressed in terms of the methods utilized in reasonable and accepted appraising and assessment standards?
Yes, they are.
Gentlemen, I tender this witness to you as an expert witness in the field of real estate appraisal. Now, sir, have you reviewed the evidence presented by Regina Brown of 116 North Main Street?
Yes, I have.
And do you have an opinion as to whether or not that property was overvalued?
Yes, it was.
And do you have a recommendation for the board?
To adjust the value of the property down to $9,100 based on the fact that because of the shape and size of the lot, it becomes unbuildable. Okay.
Does the committee have any questions for the witness?
No.
The committee having previously determined that the presumption has been overcome, this is the evidence on behalf of the Board of Assessment in terms of the appraisal.
Yes.
Am I assuming that's a vote to accept the recommendation?
Yes,
of the
it is.
All right. Next matter would be R. Rayo.
Mm-hmm.
At the meeting, I considered it fair then. I didn't think we ought to even look into it.
So did I.
At the appeals day.
No exhibits were given as well.
It appears as though his testimony was more in the form of a question as with regard to how the appraisal could go up, mm-hmm. as opposed to, unless you so find, there was evidence that the property was overvalued, substantially overvalued.
Yes, he failed to disprove the presumption of correctness by the appraiser.
And is that the opinion of the committee as a whole?
Yes.
Yes.
Next matter, John H. Long.
I feel the same.
Same thing. He failed to prove
no evidence.
Anything with no evidence.
Is the opinion of the committee as a whole?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And I personally drove over there and checked out that two areas over the weekend, and I agree with leaving it like it is.
Have more?
This is an exempt property.
Oh, this was the one that was Habitat for Humanity, is that correct?
Yes.
But once it goes over to...
His concern was, even though it's exempt now, that once they convey title to the person who buys it, that tax base would affect them. Mr. Samanis, do you have any comments?
Yes. typically in the neighborhood where this property is located, the site value that we would have allocated would have been about $45,000. Due to the fact that this parcel has been granted the possibility of being a buildable site due to a variance through the town of Smyrna, I consider that it would be fair to make an adjustment because of the fact that it was smaller than the average lot. And I adjusted the value from the typical $45,000 to about $34,300. What I did is I kind of adjusted, like I said, for even though it's a buildable site, it is a much smaller lot than the average one in town.
Right, Mr. Sabanis, you're still under oath. That would be your professional recommendation?
Yes, that would be my professional recommendation.
And I agree with it as long as it's exempt, as long as just a Habitat Humanity owns it, and then when it becomes owned by someone else, then it should be taxed at 34.3.
And I'm addressing the property as being exempt also.
Right.
I mean, this is not a taxable property, so as far as I'm concerned.
I would agree as long as it stays exempt, but once it does, it needs to go back to the original
right.
size.
Same.
Yep.
When you say original, what value?
Back to 45. The 45,000 value.
Well,
or whatever it is at the time.
So long as it's exempt, it's not taxable at all. And I guess his concern was what impact would that particular valuation have upon the low to moderate income purchaser? And it just seemed to me if it's going to revert back to the original amount, it probably just should stay there because it's going to have no impact upon the Habitat to Humanity at all during its exempt period.
Right. I mean, okay, it's 45, whether it's being taxed or not.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, that's pretty much what we agreed on. I
leave
guess,
it the way it
remain
is.
At 45.
That's not what happened, though. Mr. Salmon has reduced it down to 34.3.
Well, I mean, but we just said it should be 45.
You still want to keep it at 45.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right. And that's your recommendation?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jim Bailey.
No evidence. He didn't present no evidence, so I think it should stay the same.
Failed to prove anything.
And that's the vote of the committee as a whole?
Yes.
Yes.
Eric Zlock.
I went over and looked at his property. See, he does have two properties. One of them has a fairly nice house on, and the second property, he has approximately 24x32 garage. And what we're considering here is one of the identifier numbers, not both of them. So his house remains the same, and I believe Mr. Salmonez wants to reduce this parcel of land down.
And it's where the garage is, right?
Right, but it's actually a real nice garage and a real nice yard.
Did he ever provide the appraisal that he mentioned?
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Personally, I would have kept it the same just by me looking at it, but I'm not an assessor or an appraiser.
Mr. Samantis?
I believe that the garage is being assessed with the main parcel where the house is sitting on. Once again, if this would have been just vacant land, the value that we would have been carrying on it would have been about $45,000. I'm saying that this is extremely small parcel, that there's really nothing you can do with it except just mow it. So I adjusted it a lot to a $11,300 figure. And I have not even considered the other parcel for discussion at all.
Right. The board having considered Mr. Samana's comments, does the board have a decision on the presumption, whether it's been overcome or not?
I'll agree to adjust the value to $11,300.
I don't understand what Mr. Salmonez means on the second line of Mr. Zlock's number six. Is Mr. Zlock 346 West South Street, two properties, $14,000 house. I don't know what that means.
I'm not sure. Those comments are not mine. My comments aren't highlighted.
Okay, so we don't know what that means at all.
We will probably need to refer back to the minutes.
Okay, now, his house actually on 346 West South Street, according to the different DC number, is assessed at 142.3. So what you're basically saying is...
The 142.300 includes the house and the garage.
The garage, and then a property is assessed at 11,300 without the garage being on.
Just the bare property.
Just the land.
Just a piece of ground.
Okay. I agree with that also.
So the decision of the committee is to accept Mr. Samana's recommendation?
To accept the recommendation.
Yes.
Earl Ford.
At the time of the meeting, I thought it was fair then. Number 7, Earl Ford.
I feel the same way.
No evidence. So.
Same.
Okay. That's denied?
Yes.
Yes.
Bobby Taylor.
Same thing.
Fair.
No evidence.
I will say that she subsequently, or her mother subsequently sent in an exhibit, which is exhibit number 20. Which I'll briefly summarize to you. It basically is a letter expressing frustration at not being fully heard at the hearing. Perhaps you should take a look at it. The last one, Gary.
She wasn't fully heard. Why wasn't she fully heard?
She was heard for quite a while. Jeez.
What is this, something for councilmen only? Because I don't have one of those.
Which one is it?
Whatever. Oh, I don't have one of those things to look at.
The minutes.
Is that what it is? Okay, thanks. Back to you later. Not to me. I'm not on the council, so maybe that's why they didn't hand deliver it. Am I allowed to look at this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Board of Assessment, we didn't have enough time. We only had actually like 3 days to review properties. And this street, I don't think anyone actually addressed. Yeah, while I was around anyway. I don't know if Mr. Whitaker had asked you anything about her property or not, but I didn't ask anything about her property. So that's why I said we didn't have anything to do with changing the assessment, but maybe something else was found. So I agree with keeping it like it is.
You want to see your letter? I mean, Bobby Taylor didn't. She spoke at length, but no evidence was offered to prove that there was anything wrong with the appraisal. But she just was being. I think she was just generally unhappy with the increase of her assessment.
Is that the finding of the board as a whole?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think her house is well worth it. I went and looked at it. Yeah, I saw it. It's definitely worth that much.
Josephine Power.
I also took a look over there, too. I rode past her house over the weekend, and I don't see anything wrong with this assessment.
She claims a square footage differential.
Maybe so, but I don't have any knowledge of that. But comparing her houses to other houses that are similar in the area, they're assessed at about the same.
She has presented an exhibit 3. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the maybe should take a look at that.
summarizing, I think she claims that her property's square footage was 2,380. We were assessing her before we sent the data, before the data mailer was created, for 2,659. She replied to the data mailer, and we corrected the square footage after remeasuring the building to 2,272. So, which is actually even 90 square feet less than what she really claims to own. So the property is properly assessed.
The 263.5 sounds pretty reasonable to me. She paid 240 for it in 2004. With the inflationary real estate costs around here, I think that's reasonable to assume the house is worth that much in 2006.
Is that a finding of no evidence of substantial overvaluation?
Yes.
Yes.
Ellen Moffitt?
Okay, that's I do agree with this one. I looked at this one myself.
I didn't check those lots, so I'll take Mr. Salmonez's.
So will I.
I believe she offered ample evidence to show that there was limited access to her lot. It's probably it's been properly readjusted to reflect that.
Salmonez, do you have a recommendation?
Adjust the market value to
yes.
19,600.
Yes, change it.
Do you think we can address this gentleman here and let him go on his way? He was here the other night. Mm-hmm. We won't have an audience or anything.
Don't matter to me. Come on up. Let's get you done.
Oh, yay.
That's
got to get sworn in.
He was sworn in the other night.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he's just retestifying.
Yeah.
That's good.
I believe someone asked for his tax statements from last year.
Income.
Right.
Yes.
Hey, good afternoon.
Paul, let's identify.
Good afternoon. I'm Kaushik Shah. I'm a partner in Dasha Enterprises that owns 456 West Glenwood Avenue, known as the Glenwood Plaza Shopping Center. At the hearing last time, I wasn't quite prepared simply because I didn't know which direction the assessment was going. Since then, I've had some time to prepare a little bit of information for the council and Mr. Salmonez to review, and I brought some copies along with me so you could take a look at it. I also have a letter to the town council and the mayor explaining why I think the value that was placed and then revised is still high. And I'd like to give this to the council and just go through this booklet, if you would, please.
Were the financial statements provided?
Yes, they were.
Well, I don't know. You can have it. I don't really need any. I'm not on the council.
Here's the exhibits.
This is the financial statements, because he said he was going to give us the financial statements at a later date. He actually gave them to us that night. And Diego, you reviewed them this morning?
Yeah.
If I may, I just want to recap what our thinking is. We bought the property, and those who are familiar with the property, it had been substantially vacant for a long period of time. We bought the property back on May 11, 2004 for $2,411,100. We took roughly $40,000 out of the 50,000 square feet vacant when we bought the property. We put in expos in the 30,000 square feet, and still out of the drugstore portion, two-thirds remains vacant because it's behind the Wilmington Trust building and it's really hard to see and the visibility is really difficult. In my letter to the council and the mayor, I have addressed the fact that CBRE, which is a well-known appraisal company, had appraised it at $2,575,000 back then, with the idea that once we stabilized the property, fully rented it, it would be worth $3,150,000. Still to this day, we have about 10% of the center still vacant. In these kind of scenarios, I checked with the appraiser and a couple of people in the real estate industry. I think the income approach is usually what is used to value properties like these. And what I did is, by the way, I don't know, for the benefit of the council, I am a certified public accountant, so I'm familiar with revenues and expenses and so forth. I have a practice of my own in Ellesmere, Delaware. I've been practicing for roughly 27 years now. In Section E, I put together a projection which basically gives you a more online, up-to-date performance of the property. And using the cap rate that Mr. Semenes and I had spoken about, which is 8.5, I come up with the property potentially being worth $2,872,611, which further proves our position that having it valued at $3.4 million might be a little too high. I understand that this assessment is revenue neutral, but we are concerned that if there is a tax increase or if somewhere along the line Kent County decides that they're going to revalue the properties, if we do not have it corrected now, it will take precedence. In Section B, I have given you a summary report of CBRE, which evidences the $3,150,000 projected value. In Section C, I have given you the income approach that they went through, and that's not the complete appraisal. I've given Mr. Semenes a complete copy of the appraisal. In Section D, Wilmington Trust appraiser, Mr. Seward, had reviewed the appraisal and expressed his opinion agreeing with the appraisal. And I just wanted the council to give some consideration to this issue and give us a fair consideration. I think also one other point, I think I heard during the last meeting Mr. Semenes mentioned that he has effectively ignored any potential real estate value increases since July of 2005. The stabilized projected value was to be sometime, I think, in September or November if we had the whole thing rented. And we still don't. So we're not that far off for a few months to think that the property... I mean, I like the idea that it would be worth $3.8 million. I'd like to, be able to sell it and, move on to other things. But it, in my opinion, it isn't. I can answer any questions you might have.
This is your income-based approach to the appraisal?
Yes, in Section E, I have given a projection of what...
I saw that.
Yeah. And I've been modest in projecting the expenses based on what we believe the expenses will be for 2006. I've given you the actual for the last 12 months ending March 31, 2006, so that you could see... And my reasons why, if... the projections for 2006 are different. Why in the remarks, why they are different? For example, if we were to take utilities, for example, the actual 12-month expense was $6,149.92, but we all know that there has been a rate increase in the last 12 months, and the following 12 months or the year 2006 is going to be a little higher. Insurance, for example, I have $14,631 for the as actual. projected 16,000. I spoke to our insurance agent, and they expect that there's going to be about a 10% increase in insurance costs. I didn't change the real estate taxes because I didn't know what the outcome of this would be, but I presume that if anything, they should go down.
Well, on your first page,
yeah.
Under A,
yeah,
you have that CBRE appraised the subject property at $2,575,000, but when it stabilized, could potentially be worth $3,150,000.
Yes.
Now, by stabilized, that means when all the stores are occupied and paying you rent.
Yes.
Well, shouldn't the property be worth the same amount regardless of whether or not somebody's paying you rent?
Well, typically, I considered that even if we were to assume that those two stores, and in my projection, I did project that they would be rented this year. You know, the 4,800 square feet can be split in two units, and I have said that assuming that it's rented beginning July 1, and the second unit, assuming that it's rented beginning September 1. So I've included $20,000 in rent for those two units. But even if you were to say that, let's say they were rented the whole year, you're talking about a difference of $28,000 in cash flow, which still would bring it under $3.15 million. My projection shows that it would be worth $2.872 million the two smaller spaces being rented 3 months and 6 months.
Now, if I was to come out with $150 million right now, say, here it is for your place, would you take it?
Well, I mean...
Would you take it?
Yes.
Then I think the appraisal should stay where it's at.
My question is, if this gentleman's shopping center reaches maximum capacity and makes maximum revenue, when will his value go up according to the town? Is he going to say, hey, I rent it all here, raise my taxes? I don't think he's going to do that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that he has the possibility of making a vast income, so therefore I think the tax should be based on what he can make.
If all your stores were empty, your tax base wouldn't be zero.
No, I understand that, and that's why I did project that the last two empty spaces
would be
rented.
But
in the commercial real estate business, I think we all know that it all has to do with income. It doesn't matter. I mean, if we were to actually sit down and value the brick and the block and the steel, it still would come out to $3 million or less.
Well, what process did this figure come from?
Well, when I have reviewed the original appraisal and then the new financial statement that were submitted, for assessment purposes, you do not qualify the interest that you're paying on your debt as an expense to establish the assessed value of the property. And you do not qualify real estate taxes as another expense because you're trying to figure out what the taxes will be. So when I disqualify these two expenses, and I use a typical interest rate for this region, I was coming up with even a higher value. I think I came out to about $3.5 million, $3.5 million, and I rounded it down to $3.4 million, and that was the last discussion I had with the gentleman. I thought we had gotten to an agreement. I didn't think he was going to show up that evening for the appeal, and he did, and he's showing up again today with the same argument.
I would like to respond to that if I may. We had an informal meeting with Mr. Samanez because we were given 10 days. So I got the letter a day before the informal meeting was, or 2 days before the 10-day period was running out. So I not only sent a certified letter, but I made a phone call and I spoke to another gentleman who set the appointment for me. My partner and I came in, Mr. Dawson and I came in, and we met with Mr. Samanez, and I gave him the only copy of the appraisal that I had, which, you know, was with him for several weeks. Of course, I asked for it back. He was kind enough to drop it off at the township office, and I FedExed him a copy of the appraisal. The day of the hearing, my office is in Ellesmere, so it takes me about an hour to get here. I spoke to him at 2 o'clock. I think the hearing was set for 4. And he said, as soon as I go down to the basement, I will email you, let you know what the assessment is. And I checked my email till almost 3:45 all the way, you know, on my way here. I was afraid that, you know, we would not get a fair shake, and that's why I ended up showing up. That's what I'm explaining to him, why I ended up showing up at the hearing. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, even at $3.4 million, we believe that that is a higher value. I don't want to, fight to say that the property is not worth money. I'm just saying that, you know, all of a sudden when a property...
my feeling, too, is we have to be consistent. Now, Mr. Salmon, is that on all commercial properties, they're done the same?
Yes.
They're all appraised the same. So if yours is appraised... like the one next door, he's arriving into that figure in the same process that he arrives at the other commercial properties in town. I mean, that's not necessarily consistent with what, you know, with your approach to it.
Well, the income approach is typically what's used in commercial properties. I mean, there's always in the full...
When you sell it.
No, in the full-fledged appraisal... you will see that the appraiser has gone through all the approaches that they typically go through, and the $3.15 million is a median that he has reached. It's not just on the income approach. But
me
not being an appraiser, I couldn't value the brick and the block and the land. I knew that, you know, from my perspective, it would be... I mean, another logical thing is, you know, a willing buyer and a willing seller is the rule. $2.4 million is what we bought the property for. We're talking only a few months after stabilization, even though it's not fully stabilized. Let's say for a minute it is. To say that it was worth, you know, $1 million more, 30-40%.
Well, the problem we're faced with right now is... if he did yours the same way he's doing it consistently with all other commercial properties in town, we don't have a basis for saying that he did something wrong.
No, no, I'm not saying he did something wrong.
I mean, we don't have a basis to say that that figure is wrong.
Well, I think during the hearing you had a similar situation with Smyrna Mart. They came here and, you know, asked for reconsideration because they'd bought the property only months after we bought ours, and their sale price was $9.5 million. It was appraised at $15 million. You know, in fact, another point I'd like to make is when we did buy the property, I had actually called the town to find out what procedure there would be, because we'd bought the property for $2.4 million. It was on the tax roll at $2.6 or $2.7 million, and I had asked if there was a way we could have that reconsidered. They said wait for the assessment when it's done.
Well, I'm going to have to go with Diego on this.
I'll have to go with Mr. Sam Nez's professional opinion also.
I mean, he's used the same basics with all other ones in the town of Smyrna. I'm going to have to go with...
Gentlemen, the test is, has there been presented sufficient evidence of substantial overvaluation to overcome the presumption?
No.
Not to my knowledge, no. Not that I'm aware.
New change.
Sorry, there was nothing to set you aside differently from anybody else.
And it will be valued at what, I'm sorry?
At the current appraisal.
Which is?
3.4? 3.4 million.
All right. We're done.
Well, thank you.
Number 10, Ellen Moffitt.
We did that one, sir.
I thought we did that one.
Yeah, did that one.
Did we do that? Yeah. Okay, we did. I'm sorry. Betty Smith, number 11.
In your pocket. I say it's okay, like it is.
I agree.
Yes, no change.
Same.
So you're finding that there's no evidence to overcome the presumption?
No evidence.
Number 11, Betty Smith. Number 12, Doris Sippel.
It was corrected by Mr.
Another, another limited access.
Yes, I noticed property in and I agreed with the value change.
Same.
All right, Mr. Salmon, is that your recommendation to revalue it at $31,000?
Yes, sir.
And the board agrees to that?
Yes.
Using the word board, they're using the word committee, they're interchangeable. Number 13, Sam and Gerda Sabelli.
Yeah, I checked the area again and did some comparisons and used the information provided by the county assessment. The Pride program, it says that the house has 3,312 square feet and they paid $384,130 for it. So I think that assessment is fair.
And I believe her testimony was that she was concerned that her neighbor's properties were underappraised.
And that's very possible, but we can't change what was not appealed.
Does the board find that there was sufficient evidence to overcome the presumption?
Yes.
I'm sorry, let me restate the question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know.
The board find that there was insufficient evidence to overcome the presumption.
Yes.
Tom, tug tying.
That's my fault. I'm playing.
I just got you some bull peanuts.
Maybe you will still. Number 14, Bob Riddall.
I again checked both of those properties, and I can't tell what the interior dimensions are. But I thought they were fairly assessed at what was presented. But if looking at Mr. Salmonez's figures, there was some square footage that was changed, and the assessment was slightly lowered, which I probably would agree with.
Now, he did submit two exhibits, number 4 and 5.
So I think it's now within reason.
Mr. Salmonez, you have a recommendation?
Yes. I honor the square footage that was disclosed on the appraisal of the appellant, and which is 1,540 square feet, I believe. And that's what I've been using. That's what I have used now, and that adjusted the market value to 105,800. On the second unit that they were appealing, I said there's no reason to make any changes. Everything was assessed properly.
That's your professional recommendation?
Yes, sir.
Committee accept the recommendation.
I accept the recommendation.
I accept it. Right.
15, James Miles. He submitted three photographs.
That's the one behind. I agree to the assessment.
Mr. Samuels, do you have a recommendation?
Yes, to adjust the market value to $10,800 due to the size of the lot.
Does the committee accept the professional recommendation?
Yes.
Yes.
Number 16, Susan Amato on behalf of Glenwood Associates, LLC. Mm-hmm. Mr. Samuels, do you have a recommendation?
I review the appraisal that was submitted by Mrs. Amato. Once again, I disqualified interest and taxes, and then I used the same expenses as they were disclosed on the appraisal. Yes, we were over-assessing the property, but I have adjusted the overall value of it to $11,720,300. The shopping center is composed of four different parcels. I adjusted it two of them in order to come up with a new market value of $11,720,300.
Mr. Simmons, do you agree that the appellant has overcome the presumption?
Yes, I agree.
And those are your professional recommendations?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Simmons, Did you use the same that you did with
the previous gentleman? Exactly the same, sir. For assessment purposes, we never use interest or taxes as an expense to establish a market value of the property.
Well, I'll accept your changes.
Same.
I have one question for Mr. Salmonez. On the third one down, there's a difference of $1,500,000 in appraisal. Was that a $1,500,000 mistake, error?
I hate to call it an error, but...
See, so would I.
The error is human.
But if that's the word you want to use, yes, there was $1 million error on
there. There really was.
Yes.
And now that is corrected, and these people should be quite acceptable to these changes?
I believe so, yes.
And then I'll agree with you.
Number 17, Justin Greener.
Okay, this particular one was the one that was brought up to be 6,000 square feet, and I know for a fact it wasn't. And yeah, and he is on a canal, so it's considered waterfront, so I agree with that ballpark assessment area. We all had questions on that.
Yeah, I agree to change the adjustment.
Same.
All
right, Mr. Samantha, is that your recommendation?
Yes, sir, it is.
And the board accepts the recommendation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Number 18 we've done. Number 19, Richard Long.
I went over and checked that residence, and I didn't think there was sufficient evidence. I thought the house was assessed properly by what I can see from the outside and the...
I've seen the house. I think it's properly assessed also.
Does the board find that the appellant has failed to overcome the presumption?
Yes.
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 Number 20, John and Rosa Muckey.
This is the one that didn't they just buy this house or something?
Yes, they did.
I thought it was okay on April 3rd, so I don't think there's anything wrong with not changing it now.
Yeah, I would agree.
Agree
leave
with it. No change on that.
No change. I agree.
The board finds there's no overcoming of the presumption. Geraldine Hickman.
Agree, shouldn't be no change. No evidence.
Same here. I'll agree with the standing.
Right, the board finds that there's been no overcoming of the presumption. Yes? Neely Brown, number 21. I'm sorry, is that number 21 or 22?
21. Same thing. She didn't sit that in.
And
no evidence.
No evidence.
And the board so finds?
Yes.
Yes.
22, Al and Dolores Cromwell.
Accept it, no change.
No evidence offered.
Yeah, again, I checked in the Pride Kent County records, and their house is listed as 3,397 square feet, and they paid $301,000 for it in April of 2004, so it's we have a pretty good assessment.
The board finds that there's been no overcoming of the presumption.
Yes.
Bruce Andrews, number 20.
It's an exempt property.
Yes, it is.
Exempt.
Was that even an appeal?
He did it, Con.
I think he just wanted to verify that it was a parking lot or something.
I don't think it was even an appeal. He was just here to...
he said he wanted to clarify.
Declare it was a parking lot.
Right.
But regardless of what it is, it's exempt property.
Exactly. So no change.
Number 24, Dana Williams.
No evidence.
There's no evidence.
Right, and the board finds that there's no overcoming of the presumption.
Yes.
Number 25, Dana Watte.
All right, now here's one that basically I caused a little bit of a problem with. When I first checked the town records, his property was assessed low compared to the other ones. And I asked Mr. Salmonez to increase it, but I think it's up too far now. I checked the Kent County Pride records, and his house, according to their records, should not be 361-3 because of he's not on the lake, he's on the corner. And I just compared his house to other houses and think that his should be lowered some. But I don't know what, I don't know if he has any rooms in the basement. I don't know anything else. But 361-3 is high compared to the rest of the residences in that area with the same square footage.
Did he supply the appraisals that he mentioned?
No.
No appraisals were submitted?
No. Would have to. All right.
Mr. Simonez, what's your feeling?
Do you know if your people went into this house?
Not off the top of my head, no.
But the house was like, 600 square feet more the first time around, and then he sent in the changes, and they turned around and added $100,000.
Yeah, but I'm the one who got his house increased. See, it was, I think it was like 276, and he was the only house below 299, and he has one of the bigger houses. So somehow when the formula was plugged in, he went up to 361.3. Now, he did pay 279.7 back in
2003.
Yeah. And according to that information, he has 3,293 square feet. Well, if that's true, then his house is still a little higher than the house on the same block on the opposite corner that got sold. That the black people from New York,
mm-hmm.
I don't know where they went, but they went. I don't know if they went back to New York or what, but they sold their house for $400,000, but their house is a little bit bigger.
One thing that we simply cannot do is to act arbitrarily. So
right.
if your recommendation is that it be diminished somewhat, there's got to be a calculation done upon some set of data that it would be a basis for the determination of fair market value.
The houses in that area in the past year have been selling for $400,000.
Skyrocketing.
Yeah. And like you said, the other one's larger.
A
little
larger.
Bit larger, but it 400 something thousand is a little bit more than 361. Also.
Yeah, I'm not saying he won't get 361.3, but if you just take him and said, okay, let me plug you into the rest of the neighborhood, do you fit in here right? No, he's a little high for his size, but he will get that much money for his house. So that's my suggestion. Take it or leave it.
Like you said, you know, we can't just be arbitrary and pick a number. We don't have a number to pick.
No, we don't.
So. We got, except the 360. Yeah, exactly. Except the 361.
Mr. Simmons, have you made any look at this change?
Yeah, one of the things that we do take in consideration when we are establishing market value in a neighborhood like where this property is located is the architectural design, the amenities to the property, the type of additions that they have put on, which makes it more appealing to any potential buyer. And if you see the picture of this property and then compare it to the other properties that are surrounding this one,
they all look about the same.
The only distinction that you can see on this property is a beautiful sunroom, if you want to call it that has been added on one side of the dwelling. And it makes it look so much appealing than the rest of the properties in that neighborhood.
So you think the 361?
I feel that the 361 is a realistic market value for the property.
Again, the test is substantial overvaluation, and I think that standard has been arrived at with the knowledge that this is not an exact science.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be substantially overvalued. And
I can't see that.
No change.
One, yeah, no change on that. The one across from Tom Sayers sold for more than $400,000.
Yeah.
That's on the corner, and it's, you know, it's
that's the one.
That's what I was talking about.
That's the same.
But he's around 700 square feet larger. Mm-hmm. The one that sold, that the black couple from New York sold, is about 700 square feet larger than Watay's.
Right. Let me be very clear about this, so that on the record, is that you're finding that the property owner has failed to overcome the burden and demonstrate substantial overvaluation.
Yes. Yeah.
I do have a question, just out of procedural. The other night, when these folks are being told that their matters would be reviewed and we get back to them, does anybody have any idea how we're going to get back to them, or given that thought?
The 17th of April, they'll all
come to the meeting on the 17th.
But that's it. That's the only way.
I don't know if have you all talked about that?
No. My thought would be that for the properties that we did have an adjustment on, that we could send a notice of change.
Mm-hmm. That's what the statute did last year.
And then that'd be the only notification that.
Probably not a bad thought.
Okay, there is one problem. At the meeting, I think everybody heard this, that we were going to redo the North Village of West Shore. Well, we can do it. And those people are on the assumption that we're going to redo it.
I think what was said by Mayor Schaefer was that we'd look at the whole neighborhood or something.
We can't.
We can't officially look at the whole neighborhood, no.
So some of those people may assume that we're going to actually reevaluate the entire neighborhood and expect something, but...
Well, pretty much we are, because there's quite a few of them
there's quite one in that neighborhood, and we're only doing...
Now, what I would do as far as notification goes, other than the ones you're going to mail notices to, is make copies of this and leave them... If they come to the meeting, they can take a copy of this.
I wonder if you ought not to post it, because those who have been adjusted won't have a disagreement and probably won't come to the meeting. But those who have asked for an adjustment and haven't gotten one maybe would like to come to the meeting and address the council as a whole, whereas if they don't know that they're not getting an adjustment, they won't come. So I'm wondering if you don't just post what you're going to do.
Well, the problem is we got council Monday night.
Yeah, they can't come Thursday and talk about their assessments on the 17th. That's a done deal.
They can come to the council meeting, I believe, and ask to be heard. Aren't they generally given?
Public remarks.
Sure.
But we don't answer them.
Well, it's not up for...
You're making your recommendations to the council as a whole. You step out of your committee status into council of the whole status, and as such, you're then hearing... My partner may be upset with me for saying this. You're hearing the recommendations of the committee. And whether or not the public is allowed to address that...
Well, that's what I say. We could make copies of this, have them available for people who come to the meeting, and if they're on it or not on it, they can see what action's been taken.
Well, I think that needs to be given some thought, and perhaps we should talk about it. Well, there's not much time to talk about it. Monday's Monday.
Are you scared that other people looking at this that... their name that's not on it?
No, my concern is this. If people walked out of here and it was said to them, okay, we'll take it under advisement and we'll get back to you.
Right.
And that was said several times. We'll get back to you. I'm just wondering if we don't need to get back to them and say, okay, it was considered, it was not adjusted, or...
Aren't you going to be sending change of assessment notices to these people?
Not before Monday.
Well, eventually they will receive a notice.
Well, yeah, we didn't say before the meeting we get that.
Right.
I suppose that's also...
I'll do whatever you want, but I'm just saying. Why don't we just call them and send them a letter to save time? Let's just post it.
Well, I think by just sending them a letter, it's a done deal. They can't do nothing about it now.
It is.
Well, what I'm trying to... try to put in here for the council members is if you can at your next council meeting get rid of all this before the public session opens up, then I think it would be better than you doing this after the public session, because if they come in and find out that there hasn't been taken care of, they're going to tie up the entire midsection of your meeting with how come you didn't do mine. But if it's already a done deal prior to the public session of speaking...
The problem is they were told they would be gotten back to.
Right.
Well, we are going to get back to them.
Right.
Okay. Actually, that's really more of a political question, I think, than a...
Yeah, that's
a legal one.
Right. Well, they're under the impression that, yeah, we are going to look at the whole neighborhood, and yeah, we're going to get back. I know, but we're not going to do it.
It's also repealed.
All right, well, I just interjected that.
That's after the recognition. Is
it before?
Well, of course, because that comes, right at the beginning of the meeting.
That's what we need to do, even.
Yeah.
So is it going to be before?
After.
Are you going to let them talk first and then
tell them? You pretty much have to. Everything is done before you get to old business. That's when the last thing before old business. That's the normal.
I'd make an exception somehow.
Well, I mean, if they're dissatisfied,
but it's a done deal then, Sig.
If they're dissatisfied, no
matter how much you know. But people can talk. I mean, it's their right to get up and speak.
Oh no.
And really, what happens if they're dissatisfied? The next step is they file an appeal in Superior Court.
Exactly.
Yeah. But
all you have to do is notify them of the change or not change.
Mm-hmm. I think when you say we'll get back to you,
all right, we'll get back to you.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we just say, out of the 41 people, we'll send them a letter saying yes, no?
Yeah,
exactly. That's pretty much that's it.
Probably all we got to do, I guess.
I tell you what, I can do one better. You have already your changes done now.
Yes,
we're going to have.
We're not done.
We'll get them out by this afternoon if they're all done now.
You can't. You can't do that until the board says on the 17th.
Council's got to approve these changes.
Yeah, the council has. So on the
17th. Can't do anything to
you them. Can't tell these people anything.
It's going to be after the meeting anyway. But we will get back to them.
But after the meeting, there's 41.
Yeah, 41 letters have to go.
That sounds going to send that.
Yeah. That'll
number 26.
Yes, go ahead.
Joe Ranzi.
He submitted this too.
I just have to take Mr. Salmon as his professional opinion on this one because I'm not familiar with it.
The one you adjusted
was the parking lot.
Is the parking lot he was complaining about most, right?
Right. The other ones were not touched.
Okay, so that's from 268.6 down to 87.7?
Right. And more than anything, I think he came in here asking questions as to whether we did take care of the adjustment for him or not, rather than appealing. So the adjustment was already done, but I could not refer to that change at the meeting on the 3rd, but it was already taken care of.
I'm going to accept your recommendations.
So the committee accepts the recommendation as to the one property and finds no overcoming of the presumption as to the other three.
Yes. Based on Mr. Renzi's testimony, I think that the adjustment made for the one property is reasonable.
Citizens Hose, number 27.
I think we agreed that night that that's irrelevant. 126, and it's exempt anyway. It will remain exempt. Okay. So I agree with it.
Change.
Okay, so you vote to accept the change recommended?
Yes.
Yes.
Number 28, Todd Sammons.
This particular one, I don't really know exactly how much a 30 by 140 foot property's worth.
But he didn't bring no evidence.
But isn't 30 by 140, isn't that unbuildable anyway? According to our code.
30 by 140. I mean 35 feet is.
It says 30 by 140 mm-hmm. is what the property is. So.
Commercial.
Yeah, but what could you put on a 30 by 140 foot?
One car garage, 140 feet long.
Don't you have to stay 6 feet off the property line on each side?
That one was previously adjusted, wasn't it?
Yeah. Something else is there is a building on this lot.
There is?
There is a building on this lot. So, and one of the questions I asked Mr. Sammons when he came in for an informal review is whether something would stop him of revamping or fixing that building and renting it out as an office space, and he said no. But it wasn't on their plans because from an investment standpoint of view, it didn't really, it wasn't something that they were planning on working on in the immediate future. But the building could very well be turned into an office space or a store or maybe an apartment on the second floor and a store on the first floor.
I don't have to accept Mr. Salmon as a professional opinion.
Same here. I can't find any basis to argue with him.
Committee finds no overcoming of the presumption.
Yes.
Number 29, Barbara Alsop.
She offered no evidence. She was basically here to argue about why we're charging 100% instead of 60%.
Right. Then that's. I did a little homework on that one, too, and found the same thing. She has a large house, nice. And it's comparable. Matter of fact, she's one of the lower ones in that area.
Committee finds no overcoming of the presumption.
Yes. Or no.
Number 30, Hitty Painter.
She didn't present no evidence.
No, I thought it was fair that late. So I accept it as it is now, too.
Committee finds there's no overcoming of the presumption.
Right. Yes.
Number 31, John Sullivan.
Did we receive any of that?
Yes.
Submitted an exhibit number 17, which is a real estate, real property, homeowners insurance declarations page showing that the replacement cost on the house is $146,500. You don't replace the lot, though, if the house burns down.
Right. And you don't add the improvements like the water and the sewer and the driveway. So I think it's assessed fairly.
Yeah. When you compare them to the rest of the properties in that neighborhood, all the properties are assessed about the same.
Yeah, I checked the pages, and they're close. They're within reason.
Okay. Committee finds no overcoming of the presumption.
Right.
Number 32, Robert Cherry.
I thought it was a fair assessment that night, and then new evidence was given.
Same.
Yes.
Committee finds no overcoming of the presumption.
Right. Yes.
Number 33, Sandra O'Hetty. Sam, it is.
Mrs. O'Hetty came in just to find out if the changes that she had submitted with her data mailer had been taken care of or not. And at the, I think there was something that was not changed, which I did that same night, and it adjusted the market value to $97,500. That's all I have done with that property.
Is that your professional recommendation?
Yes.
Yes.
And we agreed that night, I believe, too.
Mm-hmm.
Number 34, George Joins.
This one I checked over the weekend also, and it has been adjusted. But I still have a question on the value of the small parcel of land that has been adjusted to 857.
It does
not touch Route 13 at all. It does abut East Street.
To the extent that it's significant, he did provide two exhibits, one exhibit 15, and then subsequently an exhibit 15A, which appears to be a deed whereby those two lots were combined.
But they're assessed different at two different rates. Is that right, Mr. Simon?
Right. One is zoned commercial, and the other one is zoned residential. One of the things I believe that Mr. Joins had presented was he has some opinion of value and an appraisal where both property had been appraised at $172,000.
Right.
My combined value on these two properties comes out to about $171,400. That was the extent of the adjustment that was made even before the formal hearing.
What is your recommendation now?
To adjust the value to $85,700 on parcel DC 17010180212, and no changes on the other parcel.
With regard to the parcel as to which no change is suggested, does the committee find that there was no not sufficient evidence to overcome the presumption?
Right.
And as to the recommended change?
Yes.
Yeah.
David McQuaid, 35.
Appeal.
Let's see. He said that too, didn't he?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He said no appeal.
No action taken.
So I agree with Mr. Salmoness. Sure did.
Number 36, Joshua Giddings.
No evidence.
A lot of people from Wheeler,
no,
sir.
They didn't have no evidence.
Committee finds not sufficient evidence to overcome the presumption. Yes?
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
David Finicaro, number 37.
Did he send in his?
No.
Okay.
Well, it stays the same.
Yes, stays the same.
Committee finds that there's insufficient evidence to overcome the presumption.
Yes.
Number 38, Joanne McKnight.
No appeal. Appeal. Yeah.
Number 39, Carol Lavender. Is there a recommendation?
I agree with his reassessment because of the incorrect commercial assessment.
All right. The committee finds insufficient evidence as to the first parcel and accepts the recommendation as to the second.
Yes.
Yes.
Number 40, Charlotte Middleton.
No change.
No change.
Committee finds insufficient evidence to overcome the presumption.
Yes.
Number 41, Deborah Schetzler.
Provided sufficient evidence as to a square footage change.
Yes.
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 Recommendation, Mr. Simanis?
I adjusted the square footage of living space to 1,584 according to the documentation she presented. And that adjusted the value to 205,400.
205,400?
Yes.
The ones that were written in.
Does the committee accept the recommendation?
Yes. Yes.
There are a couple other items that have to be addressed. I would imagine it would be time
to... The letters.
Yeah, you got to do the letters. If you're going to do them, you got to do them all.
Does the committee wish to consider the written submittals?
Yes.
Now, remember, there's a lot of developers in here.
There's two.
Won't take long.
Okay. I think Mr. Samuels has reviewed them already. Did you change any of them, Mr. Samanez?
No, I did not.
The way you say, guys.
Well, I mean, based on his professional opinion, I think we should accept his recommendation.
I think what you need to do is take them one at a time and do it on the record.
Okay.
I think that's what has to be done to say everybody shall be heard, but...
Do we have...
Who has them?
I got some.
Okay. Does... why don't you start with the order that we have them in here is the first one would be the letter from
Ramuno.
Mr. Ramuno. Vincent Ramuno. Mm-hmm. Regarding
we all have these things. We all got them the other night.
Okay.
They're in the council packet. I remember saying, man, right. I ain't got no council packet here from last.
You still have a copy of the letter, right?
They were in our council packet.
They were given. They were given to us.
You have it too.
Not this
yeah,
week.
I have
April 3rd.
Yeah, it's not going to be in the same order, but I do have copies of them.
Unless you took them out of order, they're in the same order.
Which one are you looking at first?
I'm looking at the March 27, 2006 letter from Mr. Romano.
Yeah, is it the Bonaire one though, or is it the
The other one?
The unimproved lots in Sunnyside Village Phase.
Sunnyside
seven.
Village Phase 7.
Correct.
Okay, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I know I put them all in here. I knew what I was doing.
There's approximately 60 lots. Mm-hmm. And yes, the assessor has valued unimproved lots in Phase 7 for the same amount as improved lots, which is totally illogical, if not bizarre. The improved lots he has valued at $71,000 to $75,000, which is probably too high but acceptable. He has valued the unimproved lots for the same amount. Obviously, that is illogical and wrong since the improved lots have streets and all of utilities, which makes them much more valuable while the unimproved lots are still just farmland. If you wish, I can send you a copy of the proposal, but it's clear that the following unimproved lots should be assessed at least $35,000 or less. Handler has similar unimproved lots in the town on the market for $40,000, and he has not been able to sell them. All the following unimproved lots should be reduced to $35,000 or less. And in here he said that the cost to improve each lot is $35,000 to $40,000 per lot several months ago, and it's probably more. So, in this particular case, I'd have to rely on Mr. Salmon's professional opinion as to what they really are worth. $70,000 might be high for a lot that's unimproved, but I thought that it was we were dealing with the best use and what he could get out of each lot.
My position on this subdivision is that Mr. Ramuno has been given a free ride for about a couple of years while he was developing this subdivision. keep in mind that this is the last phase of this subdivision, and the town of Smyrna has been more than benevolent. When he was in the process of selling each one of these lots, which he has already sold five phases or six phases of them, he was only being assessed at $3,000 on each parcel, and he was selling them with a house on them, according to our sales analysis, for an allocated value of about $70,000. So on behalf of the town of Smyrna, I feel that even since the subdivision is already recorded, and he has already established market value for the subdivision when he sold the first lot, and now he has sold, six of the seven phases, I just feel that it's fair to assess him for the rest of the lots that he will be improving within the next few months, if they're not improved by now, and assess him the same as what he's been selling them for.
But the standard, though, is what's the fair market value for the lots today? For those lots, what's the fair market value for them? So prior history, really, I don't believe that's the standard. It's what's your opinion as to the fair market value, and how did you reach that opinion?
Once again, my experience tells me that you record a subdivision, and the subdivision is not, you do not change the value of the subdivision until the first lot is sold. This is a subdivision that was recorded couple years ago, as far as I understand, where he's been selling lots in different phases. And he continues to do the same, and he will finalize selling the last phase of Sunnyside Village. This is why I feel that an assessed value of $70,000 on each one of these lots that are already recorded.
And what's your response to the lack of infrastructure for those lots in existence now?
I just believe that he will get the $70,000 for these lots once he improves them. What he's trying to do here is trying to get away with not paying the taxes ahead of time and wait till the time that he sells a lot and then shift the burden to the new buyer, which, from a management standpoint of view, could be, fine. But I just feel that he should be assessed as what the highest and best use of these lots will be, and it is, which is buildable sites that he will be improving, believe me, between now and probably next spring.
Okay. Do you recall the approaches or combinations of approaches that you utilized in coming up with the fair market value for these lots?
Yes.
Could you explain that briefly to the committee?
Once again, based on comparable sales, what he has been selling these lots. It's not like he has subdivided the whole or developed the entire subdivision all at once. This is the way he practices his business. He starts developing a lot and he starts selling them, and he continues to develop the rest of the phases. So this is just part of his entire investment of developing Sunnyside Village. There's nothing that will stop him, or there's no reason why he would stop developing these 60 lots, which I feel they should be assessed at the highest and best use, which is improve lots to be built on them.
I have a question for you, Mr. Samanez. If I, as a buyer, went and bought not a part of his lot, but just a lot, mm-hmm. would my assessment be what he is being assessed?
Probably, yes.
So there is no difference between an individual and a developer. So if I can pay it, he can pay it, is what you're saying. I think that's fair.
And they're already recorded. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It ain't like it's undevelopment, still farm ground. He's recorded these.
The only problem is that he has a lot more money than a town does. Deal.
That's why, because we've let him go for the last couple years.
Again, though, the standard is what's the fair market value in money today.
Right.
And Mr. Samanez, do you have an opinion as to what that value is?
I believe the highest and best value of that property is what I have established for each one of these lots.
All right. Obviously, the committee has chosen to consider this submittal, even though it is not under oath, and the appellant was not present at the appeals day. Does the committee believe that the submittal as presented is sufficient to overcome the presumption of correctness?
No.
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 Record so note. Next one that I have in my stack is the March 8, 2006 email from Nancy Cassell.
Okay, I have that. Does everybody have it?
Yes, I got it.
I don't. I've looked at it. I don't see anything wrong with it. I thought the assessment for 116 South Union was okay.
Does the committee find that there's insufficient evidence or sufficient evidence to overcome the presumption?
Insufficient. Insufficient.
So says the committee as a whole?
Yes.
Next item that I have in my order is the March 30, 06 handwritten letter to Mr. Marco from Mr. and Mrs. Andrew McMahon.
I personally visited this over the weekend, and when I first looked at it, I thought it was high compared to the other ones. Then I happened to knock on the door, and a renter came to the door and explained that it had four bedrooms and a basement. When I walked around the back, it has a real nice deck, two-car garage, a large lot, and then I thought, well, yeah, the assessment does appear to be fair. So I don't want to change the assessment on that.
Well, does the committee find that the submittal dated March 30, 2006 is sufficient evidence to overcome that presumption?
Mm-hmm. 813 West South Street.
Next item I have is an email. Tom and Annette Harmon. James Marco, dated March 23, 2006.
Yeah, I'd like to say something about this one also. This happens to be a neighbor of mine. There's one house across the street and up some. Personally, I think with what we have as square feet and the assessed value compared to others on the street, it's a little high, but I will say this. I've been in the house, and I don't think the square foot is right. I think it's higher. Because the basement is half finished. So we can either let it stay like this or have Mr. Salmonez's agency go out and do a full inspection and determine the accuracy of what was submitted.
That may be difficult before Monday.
I know, but the board has on Monday the council can say, like they did last year, okay, let's look into that one. Because that's they did that to me last year. The next meeting after the appeals, the entire council decided, okay, we're going to have your house reassessed. That's what happened last year. Now, we can do that, but or you can just take it like it is. I don't care which way you do it.
The value is right now, what?
It's assessed at $324,200. It's a very nice house, but I believe the $26,900 is not the correct. I'm not saying that it is or isn't. I believe it isn't. It's the same figure that's with the Pride Kent County thing, but I don't think either one of them knows exactly how many square feet there is in the basement.
You think it's more than that, or
I think it is.
You think it's more?
Yeah, so, but see, I don't. He's a neighbor, so you try to be friendly, but you also got to do your job because you swore to it.
Well, if there's more,
there's more.
Well, then I'm going to say no change.
Well, that's I just did my job. So
no change.
All right. Okay. Does the board find that there is insufficient evidence in this email to overcome the presumption of correctness?
Yes. Yes, and one reason I say that is because they've listed some properties here, but
you
we can't.
Lose a good friend.
There's not enough information for us to make a decision based on the comparables they put in here.
These are for your consideration to the extent that you... such weight as you think they have.
They haven't offered enough.
Next one I have is the Bon Air, submittal March 24, 2006, by Louis Romano. Basically asks for a confirmation of an adjustment.
You checked it out, Mr. Simonez?
Yes, I did.
And what did you find?
I explained to Mr. Ramuno when he showed the office that the way I have appraised the property was I had established a commercial value for 150 sites that he has already developed, and I have addressed that as a mobile home park, and the rest of the ground is being assessed at residual rate. I think we came up with a market value of about $4 million. That is the explanation I gave to Mr. Ramuno at the time. He I'm confirming the opinion of value of $4 million, if that's what it was at the time.
Well, I think that the board needs to determine whether or not this is simply an inquiry, as memorializing a conversation and asking whether it's correct or not, or whether it's evidence to be presented in support of an appeal to establish substantial overvaluation.
By reading the letter, it looks like he's inquiring. He's inquiring.
Yeah.
That he's not appealing.
He ain't saying nothing about it. He's just asking if that's what the town assesses it.
So we can actually leave this out as this is not an appeal and just...
I think you need a finding of fact. The document submitted March 24, 2006 with attachments, do you find that that overcomes the presumption of correctness or not?
No.
The next one that I have is a document dated March 23, 2006. It's a handwritten document addressed to Town Council Re-Board of Appeals. From Garrett Brown.
Yeah, I think I looked at this one.
I don't think anything has been proven to overcome this assessment.
Well, it looks to be a complaint about the size of the increase and a concern that it's a large increase.
That's all right. Don't worry.
Yes, I guess the question to the committee is, do you find that this document is sufficient evidence to overcome the presumption of correctness?
No.
Is that the finding of the committee as a whole?
Yes.
The next one I have is... document handwritten dated April 3, 2006 from Gladys McGinnis. Did this person apply for a senior citizen discount?
I hope, because she certainly needs it. Any way to find out? Oh, you got it? Okay. As for the appeal, though, there's no need to change anything.
Well, she just needs to provide proof of income to get on. She's asking for relief based on her age. She's not really...
There's no appeal.
She didn't make the argument.
The first question is, does the committee find that this April 3, 2006 handwritten submittal does not overcome the presumption of correctness?
Right. Gladys McGinnis?
Yes, it does appear that she did apply
for
the discount, yes.
And that's $500 off her tax bill? Is that how it goes?
No. I don't know what the tax rate will be, so I can't really answer that question.
Okay, well, she knows about it. That's good. All right.
The next item I have is an April 3, 2006 handwritten correspondence from Henry and Louise Bush. My same question would be whether these people have applied for a senior citizens discount.
Yes, they did.
Does the committee find that the April 3, 2006 submittal by Henry Louise Bush overcomes the presumption of correctness?
No.
The next one I have is a marked up change of assessment notice of Charles G. Lamb that I'm not sure I understand. Does the committee find that this document overcomes the presumption of correctness?
Don't understand it.
No, I don't understand it. It's a possibility that from what he's saying, maybe the lot is too small to be assessed at that. I don't know how big or small the lot is. I don't have any evidence.
The burden's on the property owner to prove substantial overvaluation.
Should have never been annexed. I don't know what he's getting at.
There is one more written submittal. That of Cecilia Timeyer regarding 23 North Delaware Street.
Is that it?
I don't know
what the hell.
Can you hand that to?
I don't have it either.
It's at the bottom of your what the submittal should be.
Here's a citizen who.
I can't deal with that. I'm with the power company.
That's on my docket. But they're exempt.
Yeah, they're exempt anyway.
Well, we're going to have to get it in the record, though.
I have nothing.
I have a. Anybody have that one?
Mm-mm.
I don't.
It should be, Gary, at the bottom of the submittals.
I have a couple letters, a couple other letters, but
you might have the only copy.
I have one.
I don't have it.
Rainer?
I looked at it yesterday.
Is it Rainer?
Yeah, we got William Rainer, which, I mean, we have to take that like three more.
23 North Delaware Street.
And then we'll keep.
Rainer's the same one. McLaurin Associates was George Joins.
Yeah, that's the one we did already.
Yeah, we did George Joins.
Yeah. Then I have Dave Finicaro.
Yep, I got him too.
And I have William Rainer, 633 Lake Drive West.
And a Valerie Heritage.
Dave's has been addressed.
Who's that?
Who?
I don't know.
You.
But that was for a parking lot.
That was for the parking lot.
For the church.
That was a.
That's this here.
Yeah, how about the Citizen's Hose? I got Citizen Hose Company.
We already did that one.
They already did that one.
Okay, but that was a letter in my package.
Well, I made notes from the Cecilia Timeyer letter, even though I don't have it. What she basically says is her house was previously assessed at $40,900. The current assessment is $99,600. She included an opinion of value from David Wilson from Wilson's
auction
down on that one. Between Milford and Georgetown.
I gave you that one to you this morning.
And he opined that the value of the property was $44,500. I know that Mr. Wilson has a good bit of expertise in estimating the value of motor vehicles and low-digit Delaware license plates because I've used him as an expert in the Court of Chancery to establish that low-digit license plates are transferable and have value. But I don't know his qualifications to...
here it is.
To express an opinion with regard to real property.
No change. These are yours. Mine with.
No, here you go.
Oh, geez.
That's a, I think it used to say Wilson's Auto Auction, didn't it?
It did. He also, for some time, was the Register and Chancery of Sussex County.
I'll go with our guy.
All right. Does the board find that the submittal of Cecilia Tymeyer overcomes a presumption of correctness?
No.
No. All right. Then there was the lady who came in and gave some testimony this afternoon, the Carter Road Development.
Yeah. That was on Decon Associates.
Okay, did you take? Have we taken action on that?
Mm-hmm. It will be adjusted.
Oh. You mean the one that came before this council a little while ago? Right. Mrs. Decon?
Yeah.
We're going to change it.
Yeah, we already said we're going to take care of it.
It's my own record keeping. And then the last thing I have on my list is the senior citizens' applications.
Well, I have still have a William Rayner.
Yes, so do I.
Which one is that?
William Rayner.
The one that said no pool and no shed.
Yeah, he used to have a pool. They took it out of Graham. And he
does have a
shed.
That was corrected back in April, yeah.
He's been dealt with.
Yeah, April
3rd. He was here last year for the same reason.
Yeah. Right.
All right, for the record, this is a return of the change of assessment notice from William C. Rayner. It's been marked up. It has a telephone number written on it, 653-4750, and then in handwriting at the bottom of the correspondence it says, no pool, shed. Does the committee find that this document overcomes the presumption of correctness?
No.
Are there any further written submittals?
Did we take care of this, the St. Peter's thing? Yes. Okay, now how about this David Funicherio?
That was
the other. Yeah. It's still the same Funicherio.
He didn't provide us with the info he was going to give us.
Were you here?
All right. So,
yeah, but I don't know if it was a different group of properties.
No, it's the
same group.
The last thing I have here is the senior citizens' applications. I don't know how you want to handle those. I think probably the way to handle those is this. Gary, has staff reviewed those applications?
Yes, they have.
And there are certain criterion that those applications must meet on their face in order to be eligible?
Yes.
And has staff reviewed those for any contradictions with the resolution that established these discounts?
Yes, we have reviewed them, and the applications that didn't meet the requirements of the resolution have been noted in yellow. They didn't meet, in some instances, the living within Smyrna, or the age, or they were over the income threshold.
Was it verified through income tax records and all that kind of stuff, or just word of mouth or signing or swearing to it?
By them swearing to the statement.
Well, I don't know.
We didn't verify the we don't ask for a income statement.
Well, I don't think that's right. I mean, that's probably none of my business, but I am a taxpayer to the town.
Well, how do you come up with it?
Yeah.
What's that?
How do we decide that?
They fill out the application. They essentially are going to be outing themselves.
Yeah, we got to turn them in, or somebody's got to question it.
I don't think we'd all accept any of them unless they're proof that their income is what it says it is.
Again, they got to. Wouldn't they have to have the burden to show it to us?
Right now, we haven't asked them to provide proof.
I'm asking you because I don't want to pay for somebody who can afford it.
Seems to me they're providing to you a sworn, in effect, affidavit that the information contained on the application is true and correct. And I guess what the staff's done is gone through and determined where there are clear errors. For example, a date of birth that doesn't yield the appropriate age, evidence of residing outside the town or having not been a resident of the town for the required period of time, and based on those, they flagged them. Here's the question for you: how much do you want to spend investigating them?
I want last year's tax statement. That's good enough for me. I'm a taxpayer. That's what I want. I don't want to pay for someone who can pay.
Well, there's some of the elder people here that can afford it.
you know.
82 qualified.
Like all the ones living around me, they can very well.
I feel as if though, as long as they provide us with some kind of tax information. Then
I think so too. Tax information, not just a sworn document.
I don't know that the charter requires these be adopted on the 17th. Because they're not reassessments. They're applications based on a resolution as opposed to the reassessment process and the tax appeal process. So you probably got some time to if you want to look into them further, to have them investigated further and then reconsider at a later date.
I would just ask for a last year's tax statement. That's all, you know. That's all I would ask for.
I'd bring it up at the
we would need it, though, by roughly the beginning of May. Because that's when we send out tax notices.
But is there anything in the charter or the ordinance that says that that's all they had to provide?
Right now, the actual exemption is not in the charter. It's just a resolution.
I have a copy of the resolution.
When was this resolution done?
That was last year's.
Last year's. So we haven't done one?
Not yet.
Excuse me, while we debate this, could Mr. Simanez be excused?
Oh, sure, go ahead. Sorry.
Fine job, Mr. Simanez.
Well, we can have this debate changing this resolution at the council meeting.
Nice seeing you again.
You know, bring it up and...
That's fine with me.
Memphis? Yeah. So what you going to do with this?
Bring it up council meeting Monday night.
That's where it'd have to be addressed anyway.
Well, at first, we got to get it put on the
agenda here.
The agenda.
Just bring it up in other council business.
Bring it up as to the agenda.
Oh, you'd be going anyway, right?
Well, we get another
17th you're here, buddy.
After the 17th.
Document such as this.
No, you ain't.
Minutes or whatever.
Too much.
I was planning on doing that. I've already rigged it. This weekend.
Oh, yeah, right.
Hi, that completes the list that I have.
All right.
Gentlemen and young ladies, have a nice day.
But was this all recorded? Okay, now is it not recorded?
No.
Wait.
Okay, because the meeting is over now.
Well, I guess the only thing to say now is that the gentlemen adopt the decisions that you had as your recommendations for council. They'll be presented on Monday the 17th.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Fran. Say what.